Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Triangulation is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Triangulation with Tom Merritt and Leo Laporte, episode 46, recorded March 28th, 2012. Katarina Fake. Triangulation is brought to you by Stamps.com. Time is money, so don't waste another minute waiting in line at the post office. Use Stamps.com to buy and print real U.S. postage the minute you need it using your own computer and printer. To get our special offer, visit Stamps.com, click the radio microphone, and use the offer code Triangulation. Time for Triangulation, the show that takes Tom and me and then puts a third person right there on the triangle.
It's the base.
It's the power of the pyramid, ladies and gentlemen.
Pyramid power.
Tom Merritt is here, and we are going to talk to a legend in the technology industry, a woman who has done so many interesting things and is working in so many interesting areas. She's just always fascinating to talk to. I'm talking about Katarina Fake. Hi, Katarina. Welcome.
Thank you.
Her newest endeavor is Pinwheel. We'll get to that in just a second. But I have to ask you, is your name Fake? Is it really?
Did you ask me this last time?
But I have to because everybody's watching and they're saying that's not a real name.
Of course it is.
Of course it is.
It's from the German. It comes from Feik, F-E-I-C-K.
Wow.
And anglicized in the 1700s.
There you go. If you were going to make up a fake name, it wouldn't be Fake.
Right.
Did you know that I could not sign up for Facebook when I first tried?
I believe it.
Yeah.
How about Google Plus? Did they give you? No, they know who Katarina Fake is.
I already had an account, but no, Facebook I couldn't sign up for, and I had to write and get special dispensation from the Facebook police.
How many fakes are there out there? This has to be a regular problem for them.
We're actually very scarce. There's not a lot of us.
Not many fakes.
You know, most people had the wisdom to change their name, you know, when they discovered, they got to the age of 12. They said, I can legally change my name now.
I'm not going to be Fake.
But you're empowering it. I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you got to own it.
I'm going to give the list here, just so you know. And this is all from Wikipedia, so correct me if I'm wrong.
And then our audience will correct your Wikipedia entry.
Right. And we will fix it. That's one of the services we provide here at Triangulation. It has happened before.
It has.
So currently, Katarina is at Pinwheel. But before that, she was Hunch. That's when we interviewed you on Net at Night. Before that, she and her husband at the time, Stuart Butterfield, founded a company called Ludicorp in Vancouver that was going to do a massively multiplayer online role-playing game called Game Never Ending. And somehow, and we'll find out how, that turned into Flickr. Oh, no. Which is still around, but of course was sold to Yahoo in, I think, 2006, something like that. Katarina, to her credit, stayed at Yahoo for a little while. She also is, I didn't know this, chairman of the board at Etsy, which is awesome. Board of directors of Creative Commons, also awesome. Is a investor herself. Art director at Salon.com in the 90s, which is really a very cool... When Salon started, how did you get involved with Salon? Because when it first started out, wasn't it a bunch of people from the San Francisco Chronicle?
It was. Yeah, I was actually working as a freelancer downstairs at Electric Mines. That's how I got
Electric Mines.
Remember Electric Mines? So it was Howard Rheingold and the Well crew. And they were downstairs at 185 Berry Street in San Francisco. And I was working for them. And as a freelancer, I was doing a community management job for them. And got to know the Salon folks, so moved upstairs and became an art director there. I love Salon. Salon was a great
still is
magazine. Yeah, still up there. But it was a big kind of pioneer in web publishing.
It was, and it was a very lofty goal. And people left the Chronicle which was the right move, to start this first really good journalistically solid online magazine. I paid money for years. I still do pay money for years just to say I believe.
The thing about Salon that I think is interesting is people throughout its history have said you're doing it the wrong way, and they've always been wrong because Salon has continued.
Yeah. But I want to talk about electric mines. Forget
Salon. That's going way back. And it's funny because all the stuff that I've done all through my career is community stuff.
Right.
And Howard Rheingold is really one of the progenitors of online. The Well was really one of the first places online that you had a civilized community, really smart contributors, really figured out so much that we take for granted now.
I completely agree. I was on the Well. I loved the Well. It was my first experience of, I had been a BBS, I ran a BBS for a while, but the Well was my first experience of the internet, of kind of a more open platform. And yes, always great discussions, very powerful. The Well struggled, though, as it seems that all online communities kind of go through some of these problems. They changed. Electric Minds was the software foundation. It became something else. And Electric Minds is still around.
So is the Well.
And so is the Well, but it's not the same. Nothing's the same. I'm an old fart, Katarina. You're going to learn that.
The golden age.
Those were the days. It's really interesting when it is true that when you chart your career, and the internet isn't that old. We're talking 20 years, something like that. But when you chart it, it is all about community, always about community.
Always about community, ever since the beginning.
Why is that, do you think? Is that something you are interested in, or was it chance?
No, that was the thing that got me on the internet to begin with, is I was online in college. I went to Vassar College, and we had, this was actually pre-web. This is in late 80s, early 90s, and I got online, and I was, kind of gophering all over the place, and I was, and I found all of these BBSs, and I was really interested in Jorge Luis Borges, the writer, and found a community of people in Aarhus, Denmark, who were also, and so this was my kind of initial experience was meeting people who shared my interests online, far away, that it was kind of this amazing, magical experience, connecting with people, corresponding with them, posting on these, boards online. And that was my initial experience was, wow. And then the web came. When the web came, it was tremendous. It was unbelievable. It was, this was a kind of pre.com. And everything that had been put online had been put there by somebody. I noticed, so for example, I'm a big literature nerd, English geek, and I noticed that there was nothing about Vladimir Nabokov online at all, nowhere on the web. So I threw up a page, Vladimir Nabokov, here's a little bio, here's his bibliography.
Yeah.
And then put it up, just kind of threw it up there on a server, on my friend's server.
Awesome.
And that was the nature of it. That was how it worked. And everything that was on the web was put there by kind of labor of love. Loved it.
We were talking about this before the show. The internet was like that itself at the very beginning. And then the web was like this very itself at the beginning. But everything starts with a small group of early adopters who are enthusiastic and genuine. And it's awesome. And then it gets popular. And those groups get dissipated and they move on. Is that sort of driven your career as you always are looking for that next new thing where the community is vibrant and cool? And how do you keep that?
Well, the coolness, whatever, things go from cool to less cool. It's just the nature
of
things.
That's life. Yeah. Except for me. I'm getting cooler as I get older. But other than that.
Are you getting cool? I feel like I'm getting
cooler. You're definitely getting cooler, Katarina. Are you kidding?
Maintaining our cool. But it's sort of all of these people, you have to think about it as my friend Jonah's always saying, you have to think of it as it's like hip hop, not indie rock. You're not selling out, you're blowing up, right?
But you're still keeping it old school.
So
keeping it real.
Yes, keeping it real.
But how do you get the crowd to understand that? I mean, because that's what everybody says. Oh, Twitter's not the same now that everybody's there. Google Plus isn't the same now that everybody left. I mean, everybody's there. How do you? Is there a way to scale that?
You were right the first time.
Oh, maybe I was. But how do you scale that so that you have that intimate community where, like you're saying, you can put up a Nabokov page on GeoCities and everybody is trading links and starting web rings and then all of that just gets
web rings.
Blown apart as the companies move in and the crowds move in.
Well, it's funny because if you go and you look, I'm sure some of those web rings are still.
I bet there's a Nabokov web ring. Now I'm looking.
Sure. It's still there, and those websites are still there. People are still participating in those communities.
Oh, my God.
You think it's dead because you've moved on, but they're still there. They're still hanging out.
Wow. There is a Nabokov web ring. If you go down to the bottom here, it's hosted by Tripod. Look at that.
Hosted by Tripod.
Hosted by Web Ring.
Copyright 1988-1990.
So the key is to wait for all of the trendsetters to leave, and then it gets back to normal.
Yeah. Right. No, but I do think that is an issue, and it's what happened at the Well. And as somebody who creates online community, you also managed the community forums in Netscape in 97 when
yes.
when it was it you probably were seeing that kind of transition happen then because that was a more mature community by 97.
Yeah, it's interesting to me because you see now a lot of the dynamics have changed, and one of them is really this sort of the ability to follow people. So we were talking about this in the context before the show started, in the context of Pinwheel. So you were saying, wow, this is great. Look at all of this awesome content. We've got all these early adopters on here, super smart, really intelligent, very witty. And I said, well, you know, like Twitter, same thing. Twitter was like that. And you said, well, the reason that Twitter
stayed
good is because you follow the people that you follow, and then you don't really have to pay attention to all the noise.
Right.
And I think that's generally true. And that is one thing that we have, you know, Flickr was one of the first companies to have a following model where it was not sort of a bilateral kind of friending thing, you know,
right.
pre-Twitter. And I think this is a very important thing, you know, that you be able to filter out the noise. Like if you're not interested in, you know, kind of golf or, you know, gossip or whatever people are doing online that you're not interested in, you just, you know, unfollow. It's not required.
Was that serendipity that you came up with this idea of having contacts on Flickr, or was that an intentional attempt to solve this problem?
It was a very deliberate thing. You know, this sort of bilateral friending is requiring people to be friends with one another.
A la Facebook. Actually, Facebook's no longer doing that.
Yeah, a la Facebook, you know, yeah. Similarly. And it just is kind of unnatural. Like, I might be interested in following you, but you're not interested in following me, and
right.
There's nothing wrong with that. And there's other reasons for that. You know, there's businesses. So, if we were requiring, so say I read New York Times or whatever, there's no reason why New York Times should follow me.
Right.
You know.
Right.
They're publishing.
Right.
They're not friending. And so there's all of these different publishing models, and that's kind of the beauty of Twitter. And I think also, you know, Pinwheel is very much built around that as well. So, we do have the beautiful, brilliant, wonderful contributors, early adopters, in the community now, who are, you know, writing brilliant, brilliant notes all over the world. And, the question is, do you maintain that? How do you maintain that? And that's one of the things I think is really important in building and developing software like this, is that you are able to surface the best content, make sure that it all rises to the top, that the stuff that people are interested in is what they get to.
We're talking to Katarina Fake, who founded Flickr. Her latest endeavor is Pinwheel. I want to talk more about Pinwheel and what Pinwheel's all about. Pinwheel.com if you want to go. I think you have to get an invitation. It's still not... Is it open to the public?
We're still in closed beta, but we've been sending out invites very regularly.
Good. So if you go to pinwheel.com and it says, hey, you want to be here, just put your email address and they'll send you an invite. And then we'll talk about what it is, though, in a second.
Yeah.
Katarina is such an inspiration and such an old-timer.
Old-timer, right?
In this business. So,
a very young old-timer.
Wow.
You're a young old-timer and has such insight into this. And we'll talk more about community, too, because I think that's a really interesting problem that we face, everybody faces on the Internet. But first, let's talk about another problem that you don't have to face anymore, waiting in line at the post office. Aren't they changing the stamps? That they're going to change the price again.
That's why I buy Forever stamps.
Forever stamps. Nice idea. I mean, really, seriously, I was at Kmart the other day, and they said, come get your Forever stamps. You never have. But I got a better way. I didn't have to do that because I said, no. You know what? I always print my own postage as needed. That is cool. And I do that with stamps.com. But it's not just printing postage. And by the way, you don't need a postage meter or special ink. You use your computer, your printer, Mac or PC, and just print out the postage as needed. They have, and I'm going to show you how to get this, a USB scale. So you don't even have to know. You know, just throw the letter of the package on the scale, and it says this is what you need. It doesn't even say it. It just does it. If you're sending international, it's always a challenge
because, you know, you have to buy an international postage thing. This is one where you go to the post office. No. Stamps.com, every single thing you could do at the post office, you could do at Stamps.com, except Mac on the person at the counter. You can't do that. But in every other respect, everything you do at the post office.
Can't do that at my post office either.
Well, I don't know if I'd want to do it at my post. You know, they're also closing. Petaluma has three postage offices, and they're closing two out of the three. This is another problem. Don't go to the post office. So international, you type in the address. It does. It even fills out the forms, prints it all out for you. And then here's the beauty part. You don't have to go to the post office. They come and get it. There's this person called a mail carrier. A uniformed employee of the federal government will come to your house and say, you got something for me? And you give it to them and they go. You can even schedule for free pickups. They don't have to just wait for the carrier. You
what
can
is
tell
that
them.
From, the uniformed member?
I know, isn't
that's
that good?
It's like an old television.
It is. I'll explain right? that. Yeah, it's it comes from scam ads in the back of comic books.
Oh, okay, that's right.
We will have this delivered to you by a uniformed employee of the federal government. Yeah, your mail carrier. the other thing is, I don't know if you've tried this, but if you just put a package of 13 ounces or more into a mailbox, they will give it back to you. They'll actually bring it back to your house and say, no, you have to bring it to the post office. Because post 911, they want to see you and make sure you're not mailing something icky. Not with Stamps.com, because the indicia that's printed by Stamps.com has a barcode in it, that unique identifier. Any size package, everything, they'll pick it up. They trust everything. You get discounts on priority mail and express mail that you can't get. What's the matter?
Laptop.
Oh, my laptop. Thank you. Sarah just came over and just going like this. I don't know what. Is it better now? All right. As you'll see, Katerina, it's a very informal show. Now, wait a minute. Now, you're at Stamps.com. You see that? No. That special $80 value? No. Don't do that. Don't.
That seems like a pretty good value.
No. Click the microphone.
Oh.
Click the microphone and then put in the offer code triangulation. I know it's a long word. I don't know
it's
why it's.
For the, well, it's a lot of audience typing. That watches this show.
But look, for $30, you'll do that typing, right?
It's worth it.
You get $55 in free postage. $55. You get the USB scale. You have to pay the shipping and handling for that, but it's like a couple of bucks. You get a supply kit and a four-week free trial. So this is a great offer, including $55 free postage. Even if you never use Stamps.com again, you're way ahead.
You can't use Forever Stamps internationally. You can't use them on packages.
Really?
No.
Only on, like, letters
it's
and postcards?
It's only for domestic letters.
Oh, well.
Because that's why they don't have any amount on them.
That's rude.
Yeah.
I guess you're right, because, like, you're mailing a package. It's a $3 package. How many Forever Stamps is that? I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. They're not. They have no face value.
Yeah,
they're just forever. So yeah, no. This is why it's
nothing's
better.
Forever.
Don't go to this. Don't go to the post office and buy Forever Stamps. That's a scam.
It's not a scam.
It's a scam.
That's a legal definition. You can't call it that.
It's not a scam.
It's not a scam. No.
But is it really forever? Like in 1,000 years, can I mail a letter with my Forever Stamp? No.
Theoretically.
Go to stamps.com. Use the offer code triangulation. That, my friends, is the truth. And get $55 free postage. I don't even know how they can get away with that. So we're talking with Katerina Fake. How did you? Were you an early investor in Etsy? Is that why you're on the board?
Yes. Yeah, so I was. I was an early angel investor.
Smart.
And helped them raise a round in the very beginning. I had actually received an email from the founder Rob Kalin about putting together they call it treasury. A kind of select items from Etsy. I think it was very small at the time, 2,000 members, something like that. It was, Rob and two of his co-founders working out of a cold water flat in Brooklyn.
So it's like everybody loves Etsy. How could you not love it?
Yeah, super. They were really small, and it immediately when I saw it.
You
it was
knew.
Just an email, just email, you know, with a link. Loved it immediately. I could tell this was one of this. It's going to be a thing.
Do you just, is it all gut for you when you pick an investment? Is it just like, oh, that's obvious? Or do you really kind of look at pro forma things?
This was a gut thing. This was definitely a gut thing. And my, you know, what I do is consumer internet and I do community. And this was clearly, this was clearly one of those situations where you found a parade and got in front of it.
Yeah.
This was clearly going to be something that was going to be big. It hooked into all these social trends. You know, down with the monoculture, down with big box retail,
right,
back to,
right.
Like handcrafted goods and, you know, vintage and, you know, handmade. It's just really,
it just
very,
makes sense. Yeah.
I just kind of felt it in my bones. I said, this is the one.
Is this your, I know you can't say what your favorite investment is, but was this one of your best investments? Or?
Oh, I love this one.
You love them all.
I love them all. You know, just your favorite kid, you know.
Which one
do you hate?
But which one do you, which one do you just wish you could get your money back? Like, that was a terrible idea. But it's as easy as it is in hindsight to say, oh, this was obvious. It isn't really, and sometimes something is obvious and doesn't go.
Well, a lot of it's the founder. So meeting Rob, you know, you had the sense that, you know, this was a guy who, you know, he's really young. I don't know, 24 years old, 25, when he started it out, and was just very determined and driven, and, you know, was going to make it work.
I put all my money in Rugretsy. have you seen that? These are bad handmade items.
Yes.
I don't know if Ican has cheese. I don't know if Ben Ha has purchased this yet or not, but it's just a matter of time. So let's talk about community. Is there a rule book that you could write on how to foster a positive community? I mean, the internet seems full of trolls and. And if you neglect something, that the weeds overrun it and it just dies, right?
I think that's principle number one of building a good community is actually be there.
Be there.
A lot of people don't do that.
I've done that. I've started forums and then disappeared and let the people who run it and know.
No, it just, you know, the spammers and the trolls will take over, you know, faster than, you got to be there.
And the bad pushes out the good. So you get a few trolls.
Right?
Yeah. If you get a few trolls, they ruin it for everyone. And the good people just say, oh, I'm not. And then
I'm out of here. Yeah. There's other places on the internet to go.
Yeah.
So it, really be there. You know, it's actually be there and care is the initial starting point for building a good community, which is often overlooked. And a lot of it is art, not science. There's some really brilliant community members. So working at Pinwheel now and formerly the community manager of Flickr is Heather Champ, who has been a leader in online community since as long as forever. You know,
she's
as long as I've been. She's a legend in the business. You know, she was the, you know, the founding community manager at Flickr and is now here at Pinwheel with us now. And she's got that, you know, the sort of the iron fist and velvet glove and the intuition and all the things that you need as a great community manager to be able to do. You know, you need to stomp out the trolls and, you know, get rid of the spammers and all of the bad content and then cultivate,
make sure
that all the conversations are happening and people are meeting each other and thriving.
Well, that's the fun part right now, because I remember because I got into Pinwheel and I posted about getting a Pete's latte on their anniversary and you responded to it. And I was like, well, this is cool. Katarina's actually responding to my post. At this point, it's really cool because you can.
Yeah.
But I mean, you still can. It's just how do you keep that flavor as a community grows and keep it going? Because, I mean, you did that very well with Flickr.
A lot of it is when you're creating a community, you're creating the flavor and the tone and the mores and the practices of the community at the outset. And if the people building it don't model it for the rest of the community, it's not going to spread. And eventually, after a while, you know, I'm in there and I'm saying hello and I'm participating in the community, but. You know, hopefully, you know, someone takes the baton and this is how you behave here and this is what you do and these are the customs and practices of the locals.
You're kind of building a genetics for the replication of the behavior, so to speak.
Yes, exactly. And I think that we've gotten better and better over the years at, you know, creating, you know, kind of transitioning from Wild West to, you know, there's a new sheriff in town. You know, we figured out how to stomp out, you know, trolling and bad behavior much more rapidly. We've built a lot of administrative tools to, you know, look at that kind of thing. And, you know, and then also the sort of the established practices of the community. Every community is different. Every community has a different kind of personality and flavor. And I wrote a blog post recently called Killing the Abraham, which was basically saying that the founders of a company and the initial participants in a social product really determine how that community is like. you know, who the people are that come there, how they behave, uh-huh. you know, what their general, you know, kind of practices are. And it's very hard to kill the Abraham, as I said, you know, it's very hard to replace the founders. And so much of the attitude and the culture, and culture is a thing that people talk about a lot, but culture is very important, I think, in online communities. There's, you know, you could have your motorcycle club and, you know, swearing and, like, you know, off color jokes are kind of the practice there.
Not in our chat room.
Yeah. Well, I've expressed
that as replace every bad word in our chat room with the word Vaynerchuk. And that
you found that to be
it works. Except that when I say that, watch, our chat room is going to be filled with Vaynerchuks. And the chat moderators hate it because it rings a bell on their terminal. And they all hate it more than anything. But it works because it's fun, right? So it's a way of kind of handling it in a way that's upbeat and light instead of saying...
And I've expressed it as you get the community you deserve.
Oh,
in other
like
words,
that.
They're a reflection yeah.
That's true.
Of the personality of whatever it is, whether it's a blog or a community website or a podcast. The personality of that community kind of reflects back the way you're treating it. Do you feel that's true?
Uh-oh.
Did we lose you?
Did we lose Katarina?
Oh, no. I'm sorry.
Oh, she's thinking. That's not allowed. You must
sorry.
Answer without thought. No, sorry.
Would you mind saying that again?
No, I was just saying, you know, do you feel it's true that you sort of, your community is a reflection of you as the publisher?
Ish. I mean, you know, there's a founding team, so it's not, you know, none of this, you know, software development is never a solo effort.
Second person and, plural.
Yes. Yeah, so us, you know, we, the, everybody, the, you, so, no. You know, and, you know, I really do. I mean, if you look at Flickr and how it grew, it's a very kind of Stuart and Katarina and Heather and Aaron and you know, Eric and Cal, like the founding members of the team, our personality is in it, and the community grew in a specific way. And gosh, we launched in 2004. We're now in 2012. So 8 years later, I think it has an extremely strong culture, an extremely strong community. It's still evident in all of the kind of the, you know, all of the stuff that people are putting out there and the way that people communicate and the participation in the groups, that stuff is very strong, very, very strong if you've done a good job of it, and will, you know, sustain itself through, you know, Yahoo communities are very different. So even after Flickr was acquired by Yahoo, Flickr still retained the isness, you know, the Flickr-ness of Flickr.
We got a lot of publishers and aspiring podcasters and folks in our audience. What kind of recommendations do you give to them for how to read their communities and how to handle trolls?
Well, you have to, a lot of that is actually just being kind of, you know, fast on the draw. You know, you find one, you get rid of them. You have to, you can't let them sort of, you know, take over. And
is it just a ban hammer though? Or how do you tell somebody who's you could rehabilitate into a fine community member from somebody that's just like, you know what, this isn't worth our time?
It's really, you know, I've seen that happen. I've seen, there was one community, early user in Game Never Ending who was really just trolling. And one of the community members who was a mom, you know, decided to rehabilitate this person. Everybody decided to take over, and, you know, it turned out to be this kind of 16-year-old boy in Minneapolis who was just kind of lonely and trolling.
It often is that, by the way. It's not bad people. It's frequently just kids or lonely
kids. And
people.
So they took, like, kind of the mom member of the community took over and, took this guy under her wing and, you know, made him into a good community, good contributor.
Yes. Great. You know, the guy who moderates our chat right now, Dan, who's our chief moderator. We have 8 or 9. I banned like 5 times from forums. This is 15 years ago, because he was the worst troll ever. Dan will admit that. He was the worst troll ever, but we rehabilitated him. And now, 2 times, he says. Oh, it was only twice. But now he is a great member of the community, such a great member of the community that he runs as a volunteer all our chat moderators. So it's interesting. You can often rehabilitate people if you give them a little attention and love, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And sometimes you can't.
It takes a lot of love.
So let's talk about Pinwheel, because I'm right now I'm posting on Pinwheel. You'll excuse me if I'm distracted. What is Pinwheel? Pinwheel.com.
Oh, would you like fries with that? I see somebody is posting here.
I am.
So basically, it is the ability to find and leave notes all over the world. Very simple. It's a very simple idea. It maps to real-world behavior. There are, as you can see, who is that actually putting that
this
in there?
This is me. This is my first job.
Oh, this is you.
So yeah, this is the Pinwheel Challenge number 14, last challenge. And Tom did it also, because this is what was my first job, right?
This is what was my first job, exactly.
What's going on? Is your kid getting in the way there? What's going on?
I can tell
you're being distracted. Is that your daughter?
Amen.
That's all right. Invite her over, unless you don't want her to be seen on TV. It's or if you don't want her to be seen. It's okay. We got kids, too, and animals. Actually, Tom has animals. I have kids. Sometimes it's hard to tell the difference.
I mix them up all the time.
So I'm writing. My first job was at McDonald's in Santa Cruz. I started as a cashier, then worked as a fry cook. I still have no feeling in my fingertips, and eventually achieved the exalted rank of closer. See, they're smart at places like this. They made being closer like the height.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Right.
That's the guy who, get this, this is the job you want, who had to stay to the end, 1 a.m. Then you go through the void bin, which is all the hamburgers that were made but not sold, and count them one by one. We tried to donate those old hamburgers to the dog pound, and they wouldn't take it. They said, there's not enough protein. We can't feed this to animals. Scrape. This is all true. Scrape the grill. That's fun. And by the way, you cure the grill. In the old days, now it's very different. It's all mechanized. In the old days, you'd cure the grill with pickle juice. So you scraped. Then you have leftover pickle juice from the cans, giant cans of pickles. You pour the pickle juice on there. I guess it's acidic. It's. And then lock the door, you know, and you kind of go home like this. And you smell, I am not kidding, if you ever work at a hamburger chain, you cannot get the smell of hamburger grease out of your pores. And then so I'm saying I quit every fall to go back to school and applied for the job every summer break. They finally declined to rehire me because they said I didn't have McDonald's in my career path. I wasn't really dedicated to the McDonald's way of life.
And here you are today.
And they were right. I can't say they were wrong. So this is fun. So others are doing this? I hope.
Others are doing this, and there's all kinds of notes being left all over the place. If you go on the front page, there is somebody who is based in rural Southwest Alabama. And they have written, I don't know how many notes they've written at this point, so many. About rural Southwest Alabama museums.
So the focus of this is geographic. Is it like Flickr for Places kind of?
It's ish, yes. You know, it's not really about photographs, but it's about leaving notes in places. Yeah. And the thing that's interesting about it.
Discover beautiful rural Southwest Alabama.
Yes. See.
Wow.
Look.
So I should do this for Petaluma.
Absolutely, you should do this for Petaluma.
That's neat.
It's, you know, one of the things about Pinwheel, which is typical of really good web services and web enterprises like this, is you don't get it at first. When someone says, oh, it's about leaving notes places, you're like, okay, well, what does that mean? It takes me a second to wrap my head around it. But then when you start to do it, you immediately get it. When you actually
go
through the motions, you're like, oh, I get it. That I put a thing on the map and then I tell a description and then I can add this and that and I can follow other people's and I can make those maps. And that's what the challenges are, a fantastic idea, because it's an easy way
to
kind of shuttle someone into understanding it.
Yeah.
Right. This is how it works. And there's all kinds of stuff on there. That's the thing. It's not limited. It's not, you know, say restaurant recommendation, which there are hundreds and hundreds of apps out there that do restaurant recommendations and that. But, you know, you can put anything on there, and there people are putting great things on there. We have, for example, you know, there's celebrity gossip. You know, Paula Abdul is selling her house. There's, you know, this is the place where Ashton Kutcher cheated on Demi. And there's,
So is the goal at some point, you think, to have kind of this encyclopedic, like almost a Wikipedia of geography?
Yeah,
where place has like stuff?
But not like Wikipedia. This is actually the stuff that gets edited out of Wikipedia.
Right.
This is actually the, you know, your story. Like, this is the McDonald's where Leo Laporte worked.
Right.
You know, this is, you know, this is the, you know, the, like, you know, whatever, Gene Simmons slept with how many women in this town? You know, that kind of thing. Like, all of this stuff is it's there. It's actually in the environment, but it's literally the stuff that gets edited out of Wikipedia.
Yeah. The last known opium den in New York City.
Wow, this is fun.
It's like history.
Yeah.
You know, genealogy. People are putting up a lot of genealogical stuff. This is where the house was that my great-great-grandparents lived. I was born in this, town, this small town in Poland.
But now you have to, this is the network problem, because you can't, this isn't valuable until enough people have posted here that it's valuable. So how do you kind of seed this to, it has to grow, right?
We're in a seeding phase right now.
So this is the seed. Okay.
This is the seed. We are seeding it. That's what's going on right now. We launched it about a month ago, a little over a month ago. And we didn't launch it in the App Store, because people's initial experience would be they open it up and
there's nothing.
You know, they're in Minneapolis, St. Paul, and there's very few notes there. That's no longer the case. There's lots of notes all over the place now, even in some of the smaller towns. But there certainly could be more information, rural Southwest Alabama is well taken care of now.
Oddly enough.
No.
That's not the first thing you'd expect.
That was not the case. And people are using it for all of these wonderful uses that we hadn't anticipated. This is what I love about participatory media, is people using your product, the thing that you're building, for things that you had never expected. And, you know, for example, there's this one guy who is doing watercolors of all of these places, around his home. Beautiful. And then posting these watercolors all over.
Oh, that's neat.
You know,
that is an unexpected. That is unexpected.
Yeah. That was, you know, would never have, you know, anticipated this. Just today, somebody put up a set of notes that are games. So Carcassonne is set in Carcassonne.
Love it. Right.
And Puerto Rico is in Puerto Rico.
That's neat.
And Kings. It's just put all of these games.
So to find that kind of thing, you just go to the big map on the front page, and then choose a zoom that you can see stuff, and as you zoom out, you'll see more and more and more and more.
Yeah.
Pin. What do you call them? Pinwheels.
We just call them notes.
This is fun, and you can hover over it, and you can actually read it. You could favorite it. You can add a comment to it.
Oh, look, there you are.
Yeah, interviewing Katarina. Yeah. Now, of course, something like this either gains traction or it doesn't. There's critical mass, and once you hit a certain critical mass, then you can kind of sit back, right? Or no?
Ish, no, because then you have a different set of problems. Then the problem is, there's so many notes here.
Scaling,
how do I figure out what does Leo want to actually see here? I don't want to. I don't want all this, noise. I don't want all these people. I want to hear stuff that is interesting to me. And then it becomes a part of, at Hunch, we did a lot of, the taste graph work that we did, trying to figure out what it is that people like. So having spent three years doing personalization type stuff, it's much easier to figure out, this person is interested in, San Francisco Historical Society. Therefore, they are probably interested, now that they're in Chicago, in Chicago history.
Hunch was really cool, because you'd go to Hunch. I don't even know. I never really got it. All I knew is that every time I go, I just answer a bunch of questions.
Yes, and we would learn everything, kind of learn stuff about you.
Was that the point of it? And then
yes, and be predictive of things that you would like and your tastes.
So it was a recommendation engine, but I'll be honest, I always went there just to answer questions. I thought somebody cares about me.
Somebody, that was fun.
Somebody wants to know something about me. And so I would. But now it's different. It got sold. eBay owns it now, and I don't actually know what Hunch has become.
Hunch is still Hunch, but
it's
Hunch
still the same.
Now, Hunch is still Hunch, and it's in the service of eBay.
Right. Well, they need it. So you don't have a iOS app, but you're going to have an iOS app for Pinwheel?
Yes. I mean, ultimately, I think that the primary use case for Pinwheel will be when you're mobile. This is a very much of a mobile location-based thing.
Right now, and look what I'm seeing.
You want to open it up where you are, and you want to know about, you find yourself in a place that you don't know. Tell me about this. Tell me about this block. What is this building
Actually,
in front of?
that's a problem I'm having because I want to post a picture of this McDonald's, but of course I'm not there. So I either find one on the web that's Creative Commons, I guess. I don't know how you would handle that.
And you can, you know, and you can also, you know, as you know, you could subscribe to places and you could subscribe to sets. So in the future, you will be able to get information about, you know, your neighborhood. You can, you know, draw a circumference around, you know, where you live or where you work.
So I can make a Petaluma set, for instance, which is our little town here. And then now this is a set that I'm part of.
Exactly. Or you can, no, it's actually,
my posts will be in that set.
So you can make a set of all, well, you can make sets of anything.
If it's
right?
A Petaluma post. Right. Yeah.
Right.
Or it can be a Leo set.
People can follow sets and people can follow places and people can follow people.
This is an interesting use of
interesting,
following
right?
the places is really interesting.
That's a very interesting use.
Yes, you can follow, you could follow Petaluma. I could follow you. And then you could make a really interesting set about, you know, all of your favorite restaurants or...
The best creme brulee, it would be a set of
creme brulee venues around the world. All your favorite creme brulee. So if I am also a creme brulee aficionado, I would follow your creme brulee set. So when I am in, you know, whatever, I'm in Columbus, Ohio, up pops Leo Laporte's creme brulee recommendation.
Now, this is going to come up. It came up with Hunch, too. Of course, one of the reasons, this is fun, it's neat, but one of the reasons this is a good idea is because people are giving you information that has a financial value to marketers and so forth, right?
I guess, but, you know,
you're
that's
not thinking about
really,
that.
That's not our business. You know, it's not as sort of about gathering information.
I'm just paranoid after all we've learned, right, about all of this. That I think that I start to think everybody's just, that's what Mark wanted to do at Facebook. He just thought of a way to get me to give him stuff. Now, obviously he didn't. But that's what it starts to appear
like,
right?
Yeah, I mean,
right?
But I actually think that the sort of the scenario here is a much clearer kind of business. Because what ends up happening is you're in a place and you're looking for ceviche, or you want to buy a skateboard, or you want to, you know what I'm saying? You actually have some need and you seek it out. This is why you feel slightly, you know, put upon by companies that are secretly gathering information about you behind your back, whereas you don't mind it if it's something that you've requested yourself.
And I can use myself.
And you can use yourself that you're actually looking for. You're like, I need a solution. I need to, whatever. The heel came off of my shoe and I quickly need to find a shoe repair place. You know, and whoever runs the shoe repair place nearby, you know, certainly has a reason to, make their services known to you. So
Pinterest has recently had a spam problem. Do you worry about spam? Do you have ways to avoid that? Because I could see.
Yeah, I mean, spam is always a problem on the internet with any participatory media site. You know, you have to build the antibodies in the system to, you know, detect them. And there's a lot of best practices, you know, behind the scenes of finding this. This is a spam like behavior.
Right.
You know, this is the thing that, these are the things that, you know, kind of like old, you know, old, crunchy, seasoned internet people such as ourselves have encountered before.
We know this as spam. Well, clearly that it is not the rural Southwest Alabama Chamber of Commerce that is posting these. This is a real person. Although I, you know, if the Petaluma Chamber wanted to post some things about Petaluma, I wouldn't even think of that as spam if it's useful.
If it's useful, exactly. You know, like what you consider a spam, you know, versus advertising versus, you know, useful information is actually, that's a gradient, you know, that's a continuum.
Yes.
Well, that's always the argument with handing over your privacy is that they want to make the ads more relevant to you to the point that you don't notice that they're ads, right? Movie trailers are always the best example. Do we think of movie trailers as advertisements? No. We actually go and we download whole apps to watch movie trailers.
They're just ads.
Right. That's all they are.
You're right.
But maybe we want do that.
Right?
And so I literally just downloaded the Apple iTunes trailers.
Yeah.
App. Yeah.
And the problem is that people say, oh, we're gonna give us your privacy, we'll give you relevant ads, but they don't. They give you stuff that you don't want.
So that's what we should do. We should have like a stamps.com app. If you like stamps, if you want to hear more stamps.com ads, download our app. We'll do it all the time. I don't think that would work. See, yeah,
no,
it's got to be relevant.
So, do you want to give us a beta invite or anything? You want to like for we have 4,000 people watching right now. You could just turn the faucet on.
Damn. Well, basically, we have been so, you know, go to pinwheel.com. You guys are logged in, so they can't really see the sign up form. But go to pinwheel.com,
log out. I'll log out here.
And
don't have an invitation yet?
There you go. That's it. Put it in there, and there will be an invitation arriving for you within a week or two.
So soon. It won't take long.
No.
Okay.
No.
And there, look, there's Katarina, right there.
You get the satisfaction of also being an early adopter.
Yes, it's a nice time right now, I have to say. And you can find out all sorts of stuff about your neck of the woods. And, you know, it's funny because our friend Kevin Rose did Oink, which was kind of a similar idea. He started with the he had the same problem, and you obviously learned from it because he started with the app. And that was kind of the problem. Is it was like, there's nothing, I can't learn anything. I'm just going to have to be pouring content into it because there's nothing here yet, kind of thing. He closed it in 5 months because they just didn't get traction. There are other apps doing something similar. I think it's kind of interesting to start with the web first. I understand why you did that, Katarina.
There needs to be something there. I mean, one of the worst things is the empty restaurant syndrome. You know, if there's nobody there, it seems like even if the food is good, you kind of feel like, there's no one else at this restaurant.
Right.
It can't be good.
Right.
Well, I pinned the bookmark on my phone to the
That's
desktop.
What happens when you go to the website. It says add this to your homepage, and you press that, and the mobile site.
I like
is
that
very
better
good.
Anyway.
Yeah.
I also
think that apps are very different from the web in terms of your expectations and user expectations of it. If you open up an app, you download an app, you go through all the trouble of doing that, and then you have a really bad initial experience. Yeah. You know, it's not like the web. It's not like you can go away and then come back again someday when it's better.
You're an old timer. You're a web old timer like I am. I like the open web, and I worry about the appification of the world and the silos that each app represents. And
you know, we got one person in the chat room wants to know: are you going to stick with Google Maps or go to OpenStreetMap?
Yeah.
Speaking of
good
open,
that's a good question. You know, I feel obviously very strong. You know, on the board of Creative Commons, I feel very strong affinities to open web. So TBD, but you know. I think our heart's in the right place.
I like it. I like it. Katarina Fake, it's so good to talk to you again. It's always a joy. Thank you for being here. If people want to try this, do go to pinwheel.com and apply. You'll get a beta invite quick. It is. You know, I can see the fun of this. And especially those challenges. Do the pinwheel challenges. There's 15 of them to date. And that gives you some inspiration for posting. It was fun to post my first job, actually. Now I want to go to Santa Cruz and take a picture. But it's not the same because it was the original McDonald's. They for the long time they didn't change. It was like that old style McDonald's that was kind of fun. Thank you, Katarina.
All right, thanks for having me.
Great to talk to you. Thanks for joining us. Pinwheel.com. Who is next week? Do we know?
Yes, it is
somebody wonderful.
In fact,
we're trying to do all women in March. I think
it's Jeff Clavier.
So there you go.
But it's April.
But it's April, so it's okay. Jeff Clavier, who is an amazing investor, a guy we met at Le Web in Paris, but he has some amazing investments, and we'll talk about angel investing, venture capital, and its role in innovation in the U.S. Does that sound? That sounds very NPR when I say it like that. Next time on Triangulation.